Leanne Riley is one of the world's top elite athletes. She's been a regular in the England women's rugby team since 2013, and now she looks forward to next year's World Cup series in New Zealand after having played a prominent role in the incredible England run of performances in recent tournaments. John talks to Leanne about what she's learned as a leader in the game, which has rapidly developed over a short space of years. Sit back, stride out, or simply be, but listen to a great show.
We're joined today by Leanne Riley, who the England rugby coach, Simon Middleton, described as possibly the best scrum half in the world in women's rugby today. So we're delighted to have you here, Leanne. Thank you for joining us on The Evolving Leader.
Thank you very much for having me.
So we're here to talk about leadership, and you occupy a really interesting position both in the game, but also generally in the world of women's sport. And I think in the last 5 years, we've seen a kind of tipping point of perhaps, you know, the women's victory in the hockey finals of the Olympics, which was a very inspiring and emotional victory. The increasing awareness of the excellence of the women's football game, and the fact that it's now available more on television and people are able to see it easily. And then, you know, I've long been a rugby fan, but it's only since I got to know you that I started watching women's rugby, and I was transformed in terms of my understanding and busted loads of assumptions about what that game was like. But now I find that, I have to say, more enjoyable in some respects than watching the men's game, because of the just incredible athleticism of women's rugby. So delighted to have you here, and wanted to dig into some of the issues facing you as a professional, but also as a leader in your sport. So can we start just with a little bit of your kind of sense of where are we in the women's game? You know, where has it come to since you've been a player for the last 8 or 9 years?
It's massively improved, and the profile is next level in comparison to when, you know, when I was 17, 18, coming into from the junior game into the women's game. It's a different game now, and part of that is on the field. Like, we've changed as players and we've brought the game on ourselves, but also, like you alluded to with the Olympics and the women's football and the way that's gone, I think to a certain extent we've started to mirror that now, but also the success from the 2014 World Cup down in France. I know that the TV coverage for that was insane, and a lot of our games now are slowly becoming on live stream TV, and it's not all on Sky, or it's not all just streamed, you know, on the internet. So the accessibility is there, and the profile is lifting, and the amount of people that are now either tuning in for their first game, or like you say, they now know someone within the game, so actually they're following that person and watching it much more, not just internationally, but also from a domestic league point of view. With COVID, a lot of our games have been streamed this year because obviously we haven't been able to have people in the stands. So the regularity of it being able to for people to watch, whether that is face-to-face or online, has massively improved our profile of the game.
So give us a quick tour of your career, the highlights and your achievements since you started in the game.
Yeah, so I came up through the pathway, which has also changed since I was a part of it. So starting off at club rugby, getting selected into my county and my regional teams through the age groups. And again, as I was 17, 18, playing within those national teams. So we had like an England under 18s at the time. It was called a talent development group. We played, you know, just the Wales and the Scotland, but that was really exciting at the time. And then under 20s was another huge part of my career. And that's what then brought me into the senior team. So I got capped first time for the England 15s in 2013. Before then, I was part of the sevens and played on the world circuit, traveled the world for a couple of years, which was amazing. And then as I started to really nail down the scrum half position within the 15s game, that's where my focus came. So yeah, career highlights. We've won the Grand Slam for the last technically 3 years, but this year was a bit of a different format. Part of the World Cup in 2017, came away with a silver medal, and being fully contracted, I think, is another massive thing for me. And it's something that I'm really enjoying at the moment.
And your club rugby as well, you've got some, you know, pretty notable achievements there as well, haven't you?
Yeah, just come off the back of winning the Allianz Premier 15s final. That was amazing, down at Gloucester Rugby Club. Insane crowd, insane people. The numbers watching it was huge. That was a really big moment for me. And then just being successful throughout the years at different clubs, or I've been with Harlequins for 5 years now. So, you know, making those finals the last couple of years and not coming out on the right end of the result was tough. So to be able to do it third time lucky was pretty impressive.
So how has the game changed? Because I think, you know, we talked about some of the assumptions that people might have about women's rugby. How have they changed? What have been the big shifts that you've noticed and experienced as being, you know, through your journey?
Starting with on the field, I think the game and the style of rugby we play is different to the men. You know, we're not as big and we're potentially not as strong in terms of weight for weight kilo, but we play a skillful game of rugby. Our passing, our running, even our kicking game. Again, when I was 17, 18, a lot of people would say, the kicking in women's rugby, there's a massive difference in comparison to the men. But I think you look at that now and it's, you know, it's completely 180'd. Our kicking game is something that we use through England as a weapon, and it's an attacking threat for other teams to be able to try and defend against. But you also see some of the collisions now that we do put in. You know, we have in our gum shields a collision tracker to see how much force is going through from a lot of the concussion stuff that's happened. And the difference in the game from a collision point of view, from a running meters point of view, we have a GPS that tells us how far we've run, how much explosive distance that is. All the numbers are increasing, and they have increased over the last 10 years of the game improving, ball in play time. You know, you used to have a lot of dead ball of, okay, it's a scrum, now we're going to reset the scrum. So that kind of time is all going away, and we're playing much more. The level of rugby and the amount of rugby we're playing within those 80 minutes is getting higher and harder, and it's exciting. It's hard. It's hard work, but it's good. And then from an off-field perspective, I think what people are doing within the game to raise the game's profile is huge. You know, you see at Twickenham Stoop outside, you've got the women and the men all up on their billboards, all around the shop, all around the stoop and the stadium. Previously, that was just the men, and you didn't necessarily know who the women were or what their names were, what positions. So I think the profile of the women's game that people are doing is huge. Similar to Twickenham, I was on Twickenham Stadium the last season outside the shop door, just up above it, and that was amazing. Everyone that drove past, especially the first couple of months, I'd get random messages of a photo of Twickenham Stadium with my face on, and that's incredible. Like, I would never, growing up as a 13, 14-year-old, you never saw that. And there's just more opportunities to play the game at that age as well. I'm a coach myself, so I've got girls that look up to me, and I turn up on a Sunday morning at the community level and they love it. And again, I don't think, you know, when I was growing up, there wasn't enough women within the game at the time. I didn't have a women's rugby role model growing up, and I think that's changed. The amount of girls you ask now, it's Leanne Riley, the Shauna Browns, the Emily Scarretts, and it's just huge. And to be able to be on a profile that they can then look up to, and the fact that they now know that it is a profession, you know, girls will be growing up saying, I want to be a professional rugby player. I didn't have that opportunity to do that when I was growing up.
Yeah, and there's some real personalities in the England squad. And as I've started watching it over the last 2 or 3 years, you know, you really kind of, like you do with every professional sport, you really start to build a kind of relationship with those personalities, and you really enjoy not only the rugby, but also how they react to the situation. So let's talk about one aspect of leadership, which I think is really kind of inherent in what you do, which is you're in a very precarious situation, you know, in terms of will you get to play? Will you be injured? Will you be chosen over somebody else? Will you win, lose? You know, there's a whole bunch of things there where you've got this crucible of precarious uncertainty, and you also face no quite a lot in your career. Can you tell us a little bit about the mindset of dealing with setbacks and refusals and uncertainty?
Yeah, I think everyone's journey looks different, and everyone will get a no at a certain time or a different time, and I've definitely had a lot of them. I would say enough, so if there's no more no's going forward, that would be fab. I think my no's have come through the uncontrollable, so selection issues, under 20s, didn't get in for the first couple of years, part of the Sevens series going into Rio 2016, didn't get a contract then. So a lot of my no's have been what I would say is out of my control. And for me, that's a time where I've had to go back to the drawing board and try and remember why I play rugby. Like, those places can be dark and they, you know, you don't enjoy it. You question yourself from your ability perspective. You question why you do it. Before professionalism, I had a 9-to-5 job. I question, well, why do I get up at 5 a.m. to do my training to then go to work? So you do second guess yourself a lot. And I think something that's worked for me is going back to a specific coach that I know, Gary Street. He's coached me for many, many years. He gets a really good balance of giving me what I need, but also giving me that confidence boost. At times, we're not going to be 100%, and sometimes we do need someone to pick us up, and that was him for me. So going back to 2017 World Cup, I wasn't part of that training squad for the first half of those, you know, half a year. So going back to Gary at Harlequins and working with him through the rain, the snow, the sleet, whatever that looked like, the good sessions, the bad sessions, no matter how that session went, I always came out of it feeling good about it. So that was something that really worked for me. And going back to that, it's surrounding yourself with good people. So again, questioning why I play rugby. Okay, well, on a Saturday, I'm just going to go and play with my friends and I'm going to have a smile on my face. Doesn't matter what the result is. As long as I enjoy it, then that's a win for me. And I think people's wins will look differently at that time. It might be an injury perspective. It might be like a stepping stone within your rehab journey that by next week, I'm going to try and do my first running session, whatever that small win is. I think that's something that I've learned to try and deal with on my own. But then everyone will have their individual support network and that'll be different for individuals. But yeah, mine was definitely Gary Street and going to Harlequins and just playing with a smile on my face, no pressure, having the girl left and right of me knowing that, you know, they're playing for me and I'm playing for them. And then I ended up playing the best rugby that I'd ever played in, you know, a number of years before that. And I ended up going to the World Cup. So yeah, sometimes it's forgetting the pressure and finding you within the game, I think, is what I ended up doing.
So that's kind of like the big process, the kind of microcosm of a setback or a rejection creates a trigger event emotionally. And you have that horrible, you know, sense of hurt or humiliation or whatever it you're feeling that's negative. How do you deal with that in the moment? What's your process for kind of reframing, you know, those kind of events?
So a couple of years ago, probably not so well handled. Everyone would know, you know, if I wasn't happy with a decision or I couldn't separate that. And I think what a lot has changed since then within the management group is actually the timings of those specific events have changed. So before selection, for example, might come out an hour before a training session, I'd turn up to that training session not very happy at times. Whereas now, you know, the environment's changed, we've got more time together. So actually the timing of that can be a lot more structured. And now it's either the morning of a day off where you've then got that day to process that and do that individually, or again, within your small network, whoever you need to speak to reset yourself to then go again once you come into that team environment, or it's the night before something. So, you know, you have dinner, you have a bit of switch off time, selection might come out, you have time to process, you go to sleep, you wake up the way you need to. And I think some of it will probably be age and maturity as well. Like, you know, you've got to trust from a selection point of view, you've got to trust the coaches and know that that team on the day is going to be the team that's going out. And whether that is or isn't you, you need to help your team be in the best position possible. So by turning up to a training session angry or annoyed probably isn't going to help the rest of the team. So I had to learn quickly. But I think for me personally, it's just a bit of downtime. Process that information. Go and find out the whys, you know, from the coaches. Okay, is there a specific reason? Go and find that out. Process that as well. And then just put your best foot forward for the next time. Everyone, there's always a next time. It might be the week after. It might be a couple of months later. But there will always be a next time. So you, for me, it's just, okay, well, what can I do so that this situation doesn't happen again? Or those reasons why I'm not selected doesn't happen again, and I can focus on that.
So in the competition for the position that you have. You also have to have this unusual thing where you are playing clubs where you're against, you know, opponents that might be, you know, you might have quite a rivalry around. And I'm thinking about Harlequins and Saracens. I mean, obviously there's a very intense rivalry there, but then you play with those people in the national squad in the England team, and they then have to be your allies. How do you switch between those two frames? What's the mental process for working with your frenemies?
I think everyone, again, will have individual processes, but by the time we come into an England setting, we're all there for a common goal. We're all there to focus on England. And as much as you'll have a joke and a laugh about what's gone on at the weekend before or something, you know, by the time you're either on the training field or in competition, I would never question any of my team from an England perspective, their intentions or their movements on the pitch. You know, I know that whether it's something that I do or something that they do, we've got to back each other. And like I say, that would never be questioned. We always have a saying within England saying, like, assume the best of people. So, you know, everyone will be doing something for a reason, and we've just got to assume that whether you know that reason or not, that's for the best of the team. But also, you know, if I was working a 9-to-5 job, I'm not going to be best friends with everyone within the office. And that's how I see rugby. You will have your support network, which I've spoken about. You will have your closer friends within the group. We've got 15 people on the pitch, plus this training squad of normally 30 to 35. You can't be best friends with everyone, and you can't spend equal amount of time with everybody. And people will be in different mindsets within those training and competition environments, where if I need to separate myself from either everyone or just certain people just to be around other people, then that's what we all do. And again, going back to the assuming the best, that's something that we're all pretty good at. And yeah, I'd never question anyone on the pitch within an England shirt. When I play against them, that's a different question. But it's a competitive sport. We all love it. We play it because we are competitive. And again, if I was on their team, whether that's a club or a country, they, you know, we've got to do what's best for our team. And you're always going to find ways to wind up the opposition. And sometimes I'm quite easy to wind up. So yeah. Hats off to them.
Well, you occupy a position on the pitch where you are, your role is to coordinate the fronts and the backs. So from a leadership perspective, you are known for being very vocal. You put a tremendous amount of energy into the communications. Talk a little bit about your role as the kind of coordinator between those two sides of the team, and what you bring to that.
Yeah, so I think a lot around my communication is the energy that comes with that. Every scrum half will be a little bit different in the way they play. I like to shout a lot, but I do know whoever's on my team also likes that too. So I was saying earlier around whether it's the forwards from a defensive point of view, I stand a little bit further behind, so I've got time to see and process what the attack are doing. So to be able to feed that information in to those girls who are having to make the big tackles and get up off the floor again and get set and make another tackle, for me to be able to give them the information so that they don't have to then try and find time to go and find it, that's something that I'm pretty good at and pretty vocal at. I think from a game perspective, a lot of it's around control. So either side of the ball, whether we're attacking and I've got the ball at each breakdown and we're playing at the tempo and the speed that we want because that's right for us, or whether it's me injecting a bit of energy in defence through communication, through joining in the line sometimes and, you know, getting off the line and putting pressure on and making tackles myself. A lot of it's around control, and there's a fine balance of being in control and either doing a little bit too much or not enough. And I think if I'm too quiet, people question that now because it's probably so consistent that I'm not quiet. But yeah, I think, you know, like I say, I can be easy to wind up. So that's something that I need to work out. And I'm still working on it, but I'm definitely a lot better at understanding when people are trying to do something and making sure that that doesn't affect my game. Because the minute my game starts to break down, the forwards and the backs struggle. So yeah, I think control through my own team, the opposition, even the referee, making sure we get on the right side of decisions, that kind of thing is something that will come across to the viewers that are watching.
Hey folks, Scott Allender here, co-host of the show. Well, co-host of most of our shows. Interrupting John's brilliant discussion with Leanne for just a minute to remind you to please make sure you're subscribed to the Evolving Leader podcast. Please rate and review us. We are on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and all other major podcast platforms. You can also find us on LinkedIn, Instagram, and Twitter. Now let's get back to the show.
What I find interesting watching you is, you know, technically you're excellent and your passing is absolutely like laser beam, you know, in terms of, you know, you very rarely provide a ball that's too high or too low or too short. So technically, obviously, you're at the top of the game, and from a fitness and, you know, kind of resilience point of view, you can see that as well. But the thing that's really interesting is what you're talking about here is you are sensing the game, you're making sense of the game, and you're adapting your role. And as you say, sometimes you form part of the lineup, sometimes you make a break. I mean, you've scored a couple of notable tries, which is not usual in your position. And sometimes you fall back and you kick and you do all sorts of different things. So your sense-making ability is really fundamental to the success of this. How have you developed that ability to lean into the detail and then stand back and see what's going on and make sense of what's going on? Is that just a natural thing, or have you developed that?
I think just through experience is how I've developed that. So a lot of what you're alluding to is probably around pressure within the game. And that might be, are we under pressure? So some questions that I ask myself within the game is, who's under pressure? Now, that might be the scoreline. We might be behind, we might be ahead. It might be one try clear, it might be more. Some of that's within the context of the game. So it might be, we've lost three breakdowns in a row because people aren't getting there and the opposition have turned us over. Okay, so the breakdown is where the pressure is. So are we under pressure? And if so, where is it coming from? Is it coming from the opposition? Is it coming from our own mistakes? Is it coming from the ref? And then it's just figuring out, okay, so if we are under pressure, how do we put pressure on the opposition and how do we relieve that from ourselves? It might be kicking. So we might be in our own half and it's like, okay, just get the ball down there and let our defence do the talking, and then we'll figure out where we're at. Or flipping it, if we're not under pressure, okay, so how can we put more pressure on the opposition? So if the opposition are already under pressure, okay, so how do we maximise that? What can we do to get points from that or push them back even further? So I think some of that is individual on me from a nine and a natural role perspective, but also looking at body shapes within my team as well. Like if I look at my fly half and she's looking flustered for whatever reason, or she's looking tired because she's having to do extra amount of other work, okay, well, I might have to relieve some pressure off her then if that's her body language towards me, not necessarily towards me directly, but that's what I'm noticing. So yeah, some of it is an individual thing and that would come from a natural leadership role on the pitch. But then some of it, you know, I'm not just the only leader on the pitch. You've got the captain, we've got our fly halves, we've got our number eights a lot of the time. The 8, 9, 10 link is crucial. So if it's not just me individually, I'm looking at the other leaders to say, okay, are they feeling the way I'm feeling or are they feeling something else? And sometimes that is a conversation if the whistle has gone and we're able to have that conversation. But if there's no time for that, you've got to think on the move sometimes, or even talk on the move if you can. But yeah, it's hard, and I think it's something that I've learned through getting it wrong through the last two Allianz Premier 15s finals, not coming out on the right side of them. That was a big learning for me individually and the team. So there's been a lot of times where it's not gone right, and thankfully within the last year or so it's starting to get right.
Who has inspired you from a leadership perspective? Where have you taken inspiration from?
So I haven't had necessarily a role model within rugby. Growing up, I didn't watch much rugby, male or female. So I think when I was a late teen coming into adult rugby, I read a book called Legacy from James Kerr. And it's all about the All Blacks and their successes and their processes and how they've got to where they are or were at the time. So I think I've taken a lot from that book around how they conduct themselves away from the field and what that looks like. And then again, how they utilise and maximise leaders within the squad on the field. But yeah, it's probably not an individual person. It's more either people within my own team and taking little bits from them or just reading. But that book kind of, I was reading it at a time where things weren't going right in rugby, funnily enough. And I just needed to have a little bit of separation. And I thought, let's stick my head in a book and see if that changes my perspective. And yeah, it definitely opened my eyes up to a couple of different things.
What was the biggest takeaway for you?
I think the off the field stuff around the community and their, you know, the junior rugby in New Zealand is structured totally different to ours here. And the way they go from club to school, back to club, and how the All Blacks had a role within that, whether that was them growing up within that role or a couple of years later, how they kept in touch with their communities. You see a lot around, you know, it's just natural to them and it's within their culture and it's part of their culture and the way they see that and they relate that to the outside. And I think being able to take that into my coaching with the girls that I coach, and whether it's coming off the field and thanking all the fans within the stand and being accessible there, having conversations, inspiring the number of girls that are playing rugby now, because that's a way higher than what, you know, when I was growing up, it's another level. So if I can be just a slight role model to someone else, or if I can help Shauna Brown or Emily Scarrett, Ellie Green at Harlequin, she's young herself, like just encouraging people to be there for other people and have that community. And it's what rugby's about. We talk about it being a second family, and that's what I like to take away from my international or even club duties, to then take that onto the field on a Sunday morning in the wet and the wind.
So you're now occupying this this kind of professionalising sport. Your profile's getting higher and the sport's profile's getting higher. There's also this social media world that you have to deal with. Tell us a little bit about what it's like, you know, when things go well or don't go well. You know, that parallel universe of all that comment and interaction. How does that play out in your life?
I mean, when it goes well, it's great, right? I mean, yeah, you alluded to Simon Middleton and his comment, and the amount of people that messaged me about that was great. And I think it is great and fantastic that he said those words about me. It was very kind of him. But for me, I never take that, I don't think. You know, my first reaction to him saying that and getting those messages was, well, I've got to prove that now, type thing. So I'd never believe something like that. And, you know, until we win a World Cup and I've done everything I want to do within rugby, it's great that people are saying those things, but it's hard as a player for you to believe that, because if I wasn't the way I'd be, I probably wouldn't be playing for England. So I'm always going to try and be better. I'm always going to look at the flaws in my game. But linking back to social media, I think when it goes wrong and you've always got the trolls online or the people that don't watch rugby and think they know everything about rugby, and they're the hard people, they're the people that bring you down, or you know, you see tweets from England Rugby or Allianz Premier 15s, and if you see there's loads of responses to that tweet, immediately I'm thinking, oh, what's going on here? Do I want to look at it? Do I not want to look at it? It might not even be about me. But you always know there's going to be some form of debate somewhere, or if it's going well and there's lots of comments, you want to read it because you're like, oh, everyone's going to be saying good things. So I think for me, there's a time and a place for when I read those. Sometimes I will read them and I'm intrigued to see, you know, if we haven't played well, or I feel that, you know, we haven't performed to the best of our ability. Sometimes I do want to read those comments because they either motivate me to make sure we do better next time. It puts things into perspective when you might be reading other people that are sticking up for you within those arguments. But I think the people that also make those comments are people that don't know the game, that don't watch the game regularly. It might be their first game they've watched. It might be the first game they've watched in 2 years. They're not regular supporters within the game that do write those negative comments. And we're never going to stop them happening. We can reduce them, but we're never going to stop them. So I would just question to them, if that's truly what you think, come and see a game live. And then if you still think that, fair enough, I might shake your hand, I might not. But I think when you come and watch the sport on a regular basis, like you said, when you started watching me and following me, it's even changed from that point of view. So we're forever changing. Everyone will have a good day and everyone will have a bad day. But yeah, it's tough and people will deal with it differently. I have a time and a place for when I read stuff like that. And if I read it, I'm only reading it to motivate me to make sure that we're getting better. I never engage in it. I disagree with it completely. But unfortunately, you can't change people's perceptions or the way people act. And you've just got to take control of what you can control.
What, from your future perspective, what do you think you want to do in the sport? Maybe when, after the World Cup, when you might think about retiring, you know, assuming that you have victory there, let's hope. What are your thoughts about the future of the game and also your part in it?
The game will always go up from here. I don't think there can physically be a backward step. So the game as to where it is now, you've got a professional England side. You don't have a professional club league. It could be classed as semi-professional, I think, depending on what club you're at and what investment is going into that. So that's definitely the next stage, is the Allianz Premier 15s becoming professional for everyone within that. You know, we've been at training where we've been really lucky to have as many internationals there because we can train during the day. But actually, it's only half the squad. Again, most of our squad have a full-time job and they turn up in the evening. They play their hearts out on a Saturday. Some of them even go to work on a Sunday, depending on what they're doing. But that's the reality of it. So the professionalism side is where it's going to go. And it'll, like I say, it'll only go up from there. So that would be great to see. And coming with that, I'd like to think would be regular streaming of games, whether that's a BT Sport deal that the men have got exactly the same or an equivalent deal somewhere else. I think seeing women's rugby weekly is where it needs to go going forward. I know France do it within their league. All of their games are on France 4 TV or one of their channels there. So that's something that we, you know, I would like to think is the next step. My role within that, off the pitch, I'm a personal trainer and I am slowly finishing my level 4 strength and conditioning alongside. So I'm really keen to work with, and something that was a massive impact on my career is the strength and conditioning and getting it in at the right age. I think I probably came into it a little bit too late. So the coach that I worked with was really good at developing my fundamentals and not progressing me too soon, but just making sure I'm on track and my technique is right, but also I am developing areas of strength. I'm really interested in the power and the speed part of the game. So I love doing hand cleans, power cleans, that kind of thing. And I think it is really relatable if you get it right. And speed is something that I've been trying to evolve my game around over the last couple of years. So if I can get into that a little bit more and be able to work with the teenagers. So when I said I came into it a couple of years too late, I'd love to work with the girls and the boys of that age bracket of probably 15 to 17, where their bodies is near enough fully developed. And then, you know, they're training for a purpose. They want to get to the next level. Okay, well, how can I help that? Because I think, like I say, I probably had it a couple of years too late, but what I did have was high quality. And I think out there at the moment, there are so many people that can class themselves as a personal trainer or a strength and conditioning coach and probably not got a lot for it. Or I've seen people within gyms or wherever it might be where they're just, the quality isn't there, and that frustrates me. So if I can have a positive impact within the athletes of that age to say, right, we're going to get you to this level, then that's something that I'm interested in.
So you've spent 5 years with an amazing team with Harlequins, and you've been in 3 finals, which you've won the latest. Must have been quite frustrating the previous two to play all season, kind of neck and neck with Saracens.
Yeah.
And now you're going to Bristol, and who haven't got such a kind of stellar reputation, but they're investing hugely into the team. Tell us a little bit about the challenges that you face now in terms of, you know, that team's, you know, future.
Yeah, so Bristol Bears came 8th out of 10 in the league last year. personally, I actually don't think they should have come eighth. I think they should have come higher. They've got some quality girls within that team, but they just haven't had the infrastructure and the funding and the coaching to go with it. So, you know, you've got girls there that are part of the under 20s and the England pathway, but haven't been coached really on a weekly basis from the outside. I wasn't in it. I don't know what's happened, but the conversations that I've had with Bristol, and I was there this week, their training facilities, they're fully integrating with the men, and their training facilities are world-class. The pitches, the quality of the pitches is insane. I don't think I've ever seen anything like it. They've got indoor and outdoor pitch facility. And I think for us to be able to go there and be a part of that and just feel like everything's equal. So whether we're training in the day or still in the evening, because girls have jobs, we're training at the same place. We can use the same gym. We've got the indoor facilities. We've got the technology that they've got within those facilities to push us to be the best. And I think it's a really exciting time for them, because I was at Harlequins at the very start, and that was exciting then. And I almost feel like I'm redoing that with Bristol. You know, you've got the new coaches coming in, Dave Ward and Tom Luke, who have been a part of the men's game. So they can bring certain things that we don't even know, whether that's structurally, whether that's like management wise, from the men's game, that we're just unaware of. And I think, yeah, it's just so exciting to be able to be a part of it from the start, learn off the girls. Like I say, they've got some really talented girls. So for me to even be able to pick their brains, but also for them to be able to pick mine, to say, okay, well, this is what I've experienced in this situation, but they've been on the other end of it. And at times with England, so have I. You know, we play against France and New Zealand and we struggle sometimes. You know, it's not all easy from an international perspective. So I want to be able to go into those games, whether it's being an underdog or being on the back foot on the pitch, and be able to problem solve. And as much as it's been amazing at Harlequins, I think the infrastructure that Bristol are bringing in, they will hands down have the best programme next year and the future years. And I think they'll almost set a bar for the other clubs to then come up and reach. The results on the pitch might take some time. I honestly have no idea. I know they've been training really hard over the last month, which other clubs have had a break. So, you know, definitely coming eighth this year is not what we want to be doing. But it's a different challenge, and I think to be able to have an impact on that and an influence on that within their training environment, and also to be able to maximise that environment, I think is something that actually I probably haven't had the opportunity to do yet. And that's exciting in itself, especially in a big year that's, you know, it's going to be a big year for me personally as well. So, yeah, I'm really excited. Completely different, but different in a good way.
Well, I'm sure they're very excited to have you joining them. So let's talk about 2022 and the World Cup. It's hard to put you on the spot about predictions, but transport us to there and what that's going to be like. What are you most looking forward to? What are the biggest challenges that you think you're going to be facing there?
I mean, New Zealand is a great place. When we went there last time, it was incredible. So just being there, and with rugby being their first national sport, with it being the pinnacle of our career in a World Cup, I think the environment is just going to be amazing. So that's something that I'm really looking forward to seeing, how they build that throughout, you know, building it into the tournament, what kind of things they do to put it on the pedestal that it deserves, is something that's going to be really exciting to be a part of. Challenges. I mean, we've got a tough pool. When they were doing the draw, we were all watching it live with our fingers and toes crossed that we wouldn't have France in our pool, and we do. So actually that's going to be a challenge really early doors. I don't think we've got the order in which we're playing our pools yet. But, you know, playing someone who we play regularly. Yes, we might have come out on the right side of the results over the last number of times we've played them, but the games have been so close, you know, within the last 5 minutes, it could have gone either way in a number of those games. So if we're not on our top draw that day, we won't win that game. So that's a challenge in itself. We've got to make sure that, you know, we're ready for that challenge, potentially earlier on in that competition than we might have thought we would have had it. That could be a positive. That might be a negative, who knows. But yeah, I think going to my second World Cup, hopefully having a bigger part to play within this one, being a bit more experienced, a couple more caps under my belt, hopefully get a bit more minutes on the pitch, that kind of thing. Really looking forward to the challenge. And I think this Six Nations is also going to be really exciting going into the World Cup and what that looks like. We know we're playing a bit later on, like we did with COVID this year. We don't know the format of the Six Nations yet. We don't know if it's going to be going back to the old format or keeping it in two pools of three. So that will be interesting. And obviously we'll play France there a couple of months before the World Cup. So what more of a challenge do you want, really?
I wonder what France are thinking. You've had very, very hard games against them, very tight games, and they must have been deeply frustrated by those. And I'm just wondering, you know, the challenge that they've got to rise to in that, and how they're going to approach it, what they're going to do differently next time. That's going to be interesting to watch. Well, you know, I and I'm sure a lot of our listeners are going to be, you know, willing you on next year to get that career high, because it's an amazing opportunity. Leanne, thank you so much for joining us. That's been amazing. Really enjoyed it. Thank you.
Thank you for having me.